Blog Talk Radio.
The police, the same way, they put their club upside your head and then turn around and accuse you of attacking them. Every case of police brutality against a Negro follows the same pattern. They attack you, bust you all upside your mouth, and then take you to court and charge you with assault. What kind of democracy is that? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of social or political system is it when a black man has no voice in court, has no nothing on his side other than what the white man chooses to give him? My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. They attack the victim, and then the criminal who attacked the victim accuses the victim of attacking him. This is American justice. This is American democracy. And those of you who are familiar with it know that in America, democracy is hypocrisy. Now, if I'm wrong, put me in jail. But if you can't prove that if democracy is not hypocrisy, then don't put your hands on me.
Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, depending on what part of the world you are listening. Welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. Special show for tonight, as you all realize, of course, today is Tuesday and not Monday. So special show for tonight, Tuesday, it's March 17th, which is St. Paddy's Day. So for today, every year on St. Patrick's Day, I always mess around and say that instead of Will Green, today my name is Liam Patrick. So that's a little humor that I have for myself. So anyway, so it's St. Paddy's Day. It is kind of funny that, and it wasn't intentional, actually. It was not intentional to do the Greenhouse Effect show on St. Patrick's Day, but it just works out like that. You know, it's funny how things happen the way they do, whether it be the color green or Patrick or anything like that. For those that know the significance of Patrick, you know, I grew up in a Catholic background, and so you know, baptism, my saint's name is Patrick. My middle name is Patrick, so Patrick Jr. So here we are, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, special episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show, and I do expect a very good show as always. But before I get started on the whole details and synopsis of the show, again, I want to say thank you and welcome for listening in. For those that are listening online, again, our number is 818-691-7412. If you'd like to call in, chime in, comment, any questions, anything that's on your mind, feel free to give me a call. 818-691-7412 is the number. I'll see if I can open up the chat room for you if you're listening online. And, you know, as always, I'll try to multitask on those social media platforms, but I won't guarantee anything at this moment in time. But I always try. You know, I always try to give you the best show possible. So, again, thanks for tuning in on this Tuesday evening. Tonight, I entitled the show The Effect of Accountability and Fear of Life. Now, the reason why I did that, you remember last week, in last week's show, we were talking about the power of media, and we very briefly talked about Empire and Scandal. And in particular with, with Empire, there's always the debate about kind of like a minstrel show, if you will, but not really as far as Empire is concerned. But really the main folk, the thing I wanted to focus on as far as Scandal is concerned, I keep in mind I don't watch Scandal, but the episode that they had about the young man being shot by the police, and the young man was unarmed. So, you know, they had the big show, and, you know, I put the question out there, so what's next? What's going to happen now? What are we doing? What's happening? What's going on? And, you know, there's still reports of people being unarmed and getting shot and even killed by the police. Now, you know, there was an incident in Ferguson, not Michael Brown, but the incident of the two police officers shot. And, you know, they arrested the guy Saturday, Jeffrey Williams, who's charged with 2 counts of assault on the first degree, 3 counts of armed criminal action and firing a weapon from a vehicle. So I'm sure you guys heard about that already. But if you didn't know, I'm not sure if you heard about the naked unarmed man that was shot and killed in Georgia not too long ago. And, you know, I've talked about the young man that was cut down in Madison, Wisconsin. And we know about some other stories probably very close to where you live. So I wanted to bring the subject back up again. Now, before the show started, you heard an intro from Malcolm X. Now, you know, anything you hear from Malcolm or Martin or anybody, you know, we're talking, 40 years ago, if that, 50. You know, I mean, we're talking about something that was said that is still happening today. You know, it's a question of inequality when it comes to human rights. Now, I'm not even talking about the race yet. You know, because I'm sure there's a lot of white men and women who are also shot and unarmed as well. But this is a serious matter that's been going on for a long time. So The Effect of Accountability and Fear of Life is the title of tonight's show. As I said in my intro piece, looking back at previous episodes on the Greenhouse Effect show, we explored how fear influences decisions made in today's society. What I want to do is look at possibly the relationship of the police and the community that it has sworn to serve and protect. Now, I've tried to, just to give you guys a sidebar, I've tried on a few occasions, and I'm still trying to get representation of law enforcement in here, but, you know, I understand that at times they are gagged, if you will, you know, because there's only so much that they can say as far as being a police officer. Now, there might be other things that they come, you know, we've had Roger Washington come in, but we really don't address the issues of law enforcement. We talk about when he was running for alderman, the needs of the community, his mentor program, and things like that. So I'm hoping that he'll chime in later on today as well. But I know today he's kind of running around and doing the show on Tuesday. I know everybody's schedule is a little different because a lot of you work your schedules around listening to the show on Monday. So I really appreciate that. So hopefully we'll get Mr. Washington in soon. But anyway, so we're talking about the relationship of the policing community. But with a higher chance of being shot by the police, my question is this. Are we taking to reduce these chances? Now, some of you might be like, what are you talking about? How can we reduce the chances? Well, there are ways that we can reduce these chances of our young black men and women getting shot and killed by the police in the streets. So tonight, what I've been doing is reaching out, not only in Chicago, and other cities as well, and I'm trying to connect with different mentoring programs. Pretty soon we'll have a gentleman by the name of Lamar Shields. He won't be on tonight. Actually, he's in Baltimore, very inspirational and powerful brother, and he has a mentoring program, I believe, in Baltimore. He actually has dinner with the mayor tonight, so I think that takes a higher priority than the Greenhouse Show, so that's cool. So you know, we'll have him on the show, and he's from Baltimore. Tonight I'm expecting Mr. Mac McGee, a administrator, dean, inspirational speaker, motivator, author in Chicago. And so we'll be looking at some of his steps to help the young black people out in our streets and try to get them better educated on how to conduct themselves and possibly reduce these chances of getting shot and killed by the police. So tonight we're beginning a new chapter of the Greenhouse Effect Show, where I want to start to acknowledge different mentoring programs throughout our nation. So rather it be male mentoring or even female mentoring, because I'll tell you, I know that there's a need for female mentoring, and I know that it's out there. So if you know of any programs that you think would benefit from being on the Greenhouse Effect radio show, or you know, if there's, of course, any opportunities that I can give to promote and to spread the word of what they're doing, please let them know. You know, let them know about the show. Tell them how they can find me. You know, you can always email me, either evolvethetribe@gmail.com or wgreen@thegreenhouseeffect.com. You know, thegreenhouseeffect.com is up and running, so you can hit me up there too. And, of course, social media, The Greenhouse Effect on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, if you know of any mentoring programs, not only just in Chicago, but, again, wherever you're listening, please, you know, spread the word and tell them to give me a call. So tonight, like I said, I expect to be a pretty powerful show. I can't wait for Mac to come on in, and we'll, you know, discuss the rate of what's happening with our young people in America today, what can be done to give them some hope, at the same time hold them accountable and reduce the fear that they have as well. So that's pretty much what's happening tonight. So I was watching HBO the other day, and they have this series called Vice. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the show called Vice. It's like a half-hour show, and like in this 30-minute show, they have two different segments, and they talk about different things. Now, this past Friday, they just had a show, which was really cool because it helped to help me out a little bit for tonight. And they talked about the militarization of the police, and I just wanted to talk about this particular show on Vice. Here on the show, on this show tonight, and it was very interesting. You know, we've looked at what's happening in Ferguson and things like that. You know, if you guys remember back in the 90s, you know, there was the WTO protest in Seattle, when really that's really where the change, I think we saw on TV, the change of the police state in the United States. It was there, again, this is 1990 in Seattle. If you don't remember, there was a movie, The Battle in Seattle, and just look up Seattle WTO protest. The chief of police at that time was Norm Stamper, so you can look that up too. And that's where we really saw the change of our police force in the United States, where they were in gear and shooting tear gas, and these were peaceful protesting, you know, and that, you know, that was like the beginning of it. So, you know, you've got places like Pittsburgh, Tampa, Albuquerque, and, of course, like I said, Ferguson, where you see a militarized police force going head up with citizens. You know, we've talked about on this show numerous times the issues of fear and what's going on in our state, and what's going on in our country. There is a concern of training, proper training, not just for the military weapons, so proper training for de-escalation. There was a quote in this show, I mentioned that Vice show. Again, that's Vice on HBO, so check that out. That was last Friday. This guy said, make sure I get this right here, when the number of hours you spend at the shooting range outnumber the hours you are trained in conflict resolution, there's a likelihood that you will use the tool that you have trained more. So, according to them, it's like a 10-to-1 ratio of hours between training at the shooting range versus conflict resolutions. So it's a likelihood that you will use the tool that you've trained more. So if you're training more with, you know, weapons, et cetera, more likely that's what you're going to use. You know, and then, of course, you know, we've seen tactics used in low-level drug raids. They're busting down the wrong houses. You guys see them all on YouTube. The thing about social media, we got social media, so we got videos and videos and videos and videos all over the place. Sometimes it's sensory overload. We talked about that as well. Somebody posted a video of somebody getting, I mean, you see videos all the time of people getting executed. You know, we talked about what happened in Skid Row, on Skid Row in L.A. You know, and I see videos all the time. I don't watch them, but I see people posting them. That's something I can't take too much of that. So I'm saying all that to say that there is there should be some accountability for what's going on here, and not just the accountability of the police. I think there should be some accountability for us as far as the community is concerned. And I think that there are things that we should do, or at least attempt to do, to try to help, especially the young children, the young kids that are out here. Now, it's not just the young kids, too. I mean, there's people my age as well that's getting cut down. You know what I'm saying? It's 28 times of being a black person will be shot less than a white person or something like that. A very disproportionate effect here. It's a greater chance of being arrested, of course, we know, regardless of the crime. And we'll get into the numbers, too, in just a minute. You know, so we know about the numbers. It's a greater chance of getting shot just being black. It's a greater chance of being arrested. But the thing is, what can we do as a community to try to reduce that? Now, of course, you know, we try to tell the kids and, you know, make sure you ain't got drugs on you, of course. You ain't riding dirty, meaning, you're driving illegally or something like that. Of course, there's the obvious things, you know, but education is the main thing to help fight this. And sometimes that just means taking a kid or just and letting them know what the numbers are, or you know what the numbers are, you know, and to really see what we're up against. You know, mentoring the military, the police, to give you an idea exactly what that is, to help with this education, it started from, look up the 1033 program. This was born out of the National Defense Authorization Act of 1991. It initially allowed the police department to get supplies, military gear, through the Cold War. Pretty much it was stuff that wasn't being used, and they would use it for the quote-unquote war on drugs in America. And of course, we have the additional potential threat of terrorism, you know, in the United States as well. So the war on drugs and the potential threat of terrorism gave an excuse to, you know, give law enforcement all this military gear. The idea was very simple. As long as the police paid for maintenance, shipping, they get to use it for free. You know, there's a thing called the Defense Logistics Agency, DLA, through its Law Enforcement Support Office, the LESO. Their reasoning was that every dollar worth of property reutilizes the tax dollar saved. So their excuse is, of course, money coming, you know, saving money and not charging the people. But the people are getting executed. You know, just to give you an idea on what law enforcement is. So we're talking like maybe 8,000 or so agencies, police, law enforcement agencies, within the last 8 years, about the last 8 years. So we're talking about as far as, okay, so what do they got? You know, you guys seen the tapes in Ferguson, the videos and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm not going to give you statistics, percentages. I'm just going to give you the flat-out numbers here. So we're talking like 8,000 law enforcement agencies for the last 8 years or so. They've gotten 432 mine-resistant ambush armored vehicles, mine-resistant ambush protected vehicles, 435 other armored vehicles, over almost 45,000 night vision equipment, such as sights, binoculars, goggles, accessories. 533 aircraft, planes, and helicopters. I wonder if that includes the drones, because, you know, we got this whole big drone thing. And if you guys remember in Ferguson, remember that area, not St. Louis itself, but some of that area around Ferguson was a no-fly zone. I don't know if you guys remember that. Other stuff, over 93,000 machine guns, and, you know, 5-millimeter guns and rifles, 7-millimeter rifles. And over 180,000, of course, ammunition, magazines, and stuff like that. So since 1990, though, the program has transferred over $5 billion worth of equipment to the police departments. So I'm saying all that to say that, I mean, when you get these numbers, you actually hear how they're equipped. You know, to me, I mean, at least when I saw these numbers, I'm like, holy cow. I mean, these guys are, as they say, cock block ready to rock. You know, they're ready to go. And like I said, we've seen the videos. We've seen them head up, full up in gear, got the visors and the sticks and the chest protected and all that stuff. They're ready to go. You know, sometimes I had a picture one time when we were talking about Ferguson. And usually the ones who are dressed for the riot are the ones who's initiating the riot. Well, yeah, that's the way it is. But what can we do to keep ourselves from getting our heads busted, getting executed, and things like that? And sometimes just getting an idea of the numbers, I think, will make a big difference. Here's another quote here. There's a reason that you separate military and the police. One fights the enemies of the state. The other serves to protect the people. When the military becomes both, then the enemies of the state tend to become the people. I think, you know, that was actually from a TV show, Battlestar Galactica, actually, believe it or not. But I think that's something that our government and our law enforcement have forgotten about as far as the people. So what about the training? What about the training? How come they're not, you know, what's going on with the training? And unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to do any research on how the training is done. And that's why I would love to get somebody in here to talk more about the training that's going on, if there's any training happening. I mean, basic de-escalation procedures before you pull the gun out. I mean, hell, you got your baton, right? You got the taser, right? You got tear gas if you need it, right? You got your radio. You can call for backup. And if all else fails, you get in your car. You know, I mean, you have all these options to try to bring a situation down, but I don't see them being utilized, at least what's being displayed in the media. I don't see it. I was having a discussion with my father the other day, and we were talking about, you know, this what's going on, especially with this naked dude in Georgia, you know, getting shot. So obviously the only dangerous weapon he had was his penis, I guess. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, but the thing that a lot of them will say, and if you look back on any story about someone getting shot by the police, three words: fear of life. And that's what they'll say. There was a fear of their life, fear of life, which justifies pulling that trigger. So how come you couldn't use the baton or tear gas or taser, call for backup? Just get in your car. I guess you don't want to look like a punk. So, I mean, you know, I mean, it's a question as far as even their mental capacity. You know, we were talking about, how they're trained in improper training, de-escalation procedures, and I even wonder if they have a mental, they have some kind of screening or filter for officers as well. You know, a lot of people that's been shot and killed were people suffering from mental health. You know, I question the mental health of some of these police officers. You know, I know there's some good ones out there. I know some good ones. You all know some good ones. You know, but there's some loose ones out there too that need some help. You know, in an article in 2013, they did a review of black people killed in one year, in 2012, in this article that was dated in 2013, they reviewed what happened in 2012, 313 black people were killed by police or security or something like that, by somebody in some type of law enforcement, protection or whatever. So we're talking in one year, 313 people. That's like every 28 hours. You know, you guys, like I said, you guys have seen the numbers. You know, we make up, you know, we make up what? I'm looking for my numbers here. I know these are kind of old here, but you know, it's around about what, 14% of the population, so they say. I think that there are more minorities, but we have such a low percentage of the U.S. population, but yet a high percentage in prison. And then, of course, more likely to be arrested for drugs and receive longer sentences. Out of those 313 people that were killed, 124 of them, 40%, were between 22 and 31. Now, see, this is where the numbers really come into play to help as far as educating. I mean, I remember when I was in, you know, a teenager, and, you know, we had our issues. You know, we didn't really have a whole lot of problems with the police as far as getting shot. You know, I mean, I remember times when you hear my dad tell stories. You know, your dad telling stories, or your mom, or somebody in that generation talking about their run-ins with the police. You know, usually he got shook down, you know. But, you know, it was nothing as major as today. I remember being a teenager and the concern was, you know, the gangs. It wasn't a concern about being killed by the police. And being 21, when I turned 21, was a big deal because most of the kids that were being killed by gangs. It wasn't being killed by the police. So you're talking in 2012, 40% of black people between 22 and 31 were killed by law enforcement. That's a lot of people, especially in that age range. So first you got to deal with just coming out of being an adolescent and a teenager, dealing with what's going on in your neighborhood. And then on top of that, you got to go another 10 years after you turn 21 and hope you don't get killed by the police. Doesn't make any sense. Out of that 313, I mentioned that whole mental health issue. Out of that 313, 68 of them, 22%, suffered from mental health. 136 of them, 44%, were unarmed. And this is 2012. So here we are in 2015. Here we are listening to speeches from Malcolm X back in the 60s. And the only thing that's changed is the numbers have increased and not decreased. So I'm posing that question out there, that what can we do different? What suggestion do you all have? You know, what needs to be done? I mean, I know you guys have an opinion. I know you guys have been reading this stuff and seeing these videos, and I know it's very emotional. But I mean, the only way we can figure out what to do is through dialogue. So, again, our number is 818-691-7412. Be sure to press that one button so I can see your number light up in the queue, that you're ready to go ahead and say whatever you got to say. Again, rather even just be a comment, shout out, anything like that. Again, feel free, 818-691-7412 is the number. And again, very shortly we'll be bringing in Speaker Mac McGee. We'll be talking about a program that he's got coming up in Chicago, a manhood development camp. It's an 8-week program in Chicago. Very excited to get him on the show. I met Mac about a year ago, and I've been trying to get him. You know, actually, right when this show started, a little bit before this show. But ever since I started this show, I've been trying to get him on the show. So I'm a little excited. And like I said, he'll be here momentarily. All right, so we're going to take just a brief small break here. Give me about a minute or so, and I'll be right back. Again, I appreciate you all listening. This is the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on. Smile. Oh, honey. He's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah. Maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No Big Joyful Smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
I tell you, that whole texting and driving thing, I had to catch myself on that. So I found that commercial the other day. I thought to share that with you all. So yeah, stop texting and driving, because it's dangerous and them mugs, and people are crazy out there. You don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, be careful out there. So welcome back. It's couple minutes past 7:32. In just a moment, we're going to bring our guest speaker for tonight, our guest, Mr. Mac McGee. Again, our number here is 818-691-7412. So I mentioned I met Mac about a year ago, a little bit more than a year, and I'm a little excited about bringing him on right now. I've been trying to get him on the show since it started. Mac McGee is the premier motivation and inspirational speaker that everyone wants their students, organizations, and people to hear. He's a spellbinding communicator with 2 decades of experience empowering youth and adults throughout the country. Thousands nationwide have experienced his passion, his determination, and his vision, delivering altering messages that he crafts to meet specific needs of the audience. Now, he's an administrator, working with the Black Young Men in Chicago at Urban Prep. He's an author. We'll talk a little bit about his book, his inspirational speaker. Again, I'm getting a little excited here, so I'm just going to go ahead and bring Mr. McGee in. Hey, good evening, Mac. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. How you doing, Will?
Man, I'm great, man. I'm blessed. I'm excited. I'm trying to contain myself. I finally got you on the show tonight, so welcome.
Well, I appreciate you having me, man. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I know you. I know you're busy. I think you said that you're still at the office now. So I just appreciate you taking this time to speak with me and the audience here. I appreciate that. I just gave a brief synopsis, rundown from your website here. But maybe if you could just give them just a brief background. Tell them about yourself.
Okay. So basically, I've been in the field of human service, juvenile justice, and education for the last going on 22 years now. I started my very first job out of college. I was working for an organization called Prisoners Release Ministry, where I helped formerly incarcerated individuals find jobs once they were released from prison. And that sort of is what led me in the direction to work with young people, because I felt that if I could help young people avoid ever having to go into the adult criminal justice system, that my time would be better served and better spent going that route. And so that sort of led to my passion for young people, my passion for human service, and then my passion, and that's how I sort of discovered my passion for public speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you studied you went to Illinois State in 89, huh? You went, that was your first year in 89?
Yeah, yep. I was there from 89 to 92. Yep.
I was there 1 year, 89 to 90.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I didn't even know that.
Okay.
Yeah, check that out, right?
Wow, okay, yeah. Small world.
It is, man, and it seems to get smaller and smaller. As I don't know, as we get older or what, I don't know.
Right.
So, you know, you studied criminal justice and political and justice studies. You got your BA from Governor
yes.
State in criminal justice and your MA in political and justice studies as well. So,
yes.
You're studying, you know, political justice, criminal justice. You're working with the kids. So how did that transition from working in human services, how did that develop into you being such a strong motivational, you know, to developing your craft and being an inspirational speaker?
You know, I just think from the experiences, just, you know, seeing what the struggles and the trials and tribulations that, you know, many of our people, and particularly people of color, go through. One of my second job, I was a GED coordinator. I ran a GED program for an organization in the South Suburbs, and so I dealt with, you know, young men who had dropped out of high school or who had been expelled. I worked with young women who were part of a teen pregnancy program and things of that nature. And so, just, you know, digging a little deeper, getting past the surface reason for, you know, hey, they got kicked out, and sort of getting into what's going on in their family,
right,
with their family, what's going on in the community, understanding
right.
that you know, a lot of us, I describe this to people all the time, like me and you and other people that we know and maybe associate, we slipped through the cracks, so to speak, but there's so many of our people who are still struggling. Like some people describe it as faces at the bottom of the well, where we're still struggling, we're still trying to figure it out and live the American dream. And so I just really developed a heart for trying to, you know, reach back, trying to help people, because there were so many great individuals, men and women in my life when I was coming of age that, you know, spoke life into me and helped me. And so I would just say, Will, from my experience, seeing the different things at the different organizations and agencies that I've worked at, that, you know, there's a tremendous need. You know, I was listening to the show earlier where you were just talking about, you know, the violence, you know, at the hands of police officers. Well, you know, I worked in corrections and detention for a number of years, and just seeing, you know, the whole issue with mass incarceration and the fact
yeah.
that we're numb to it. It's like we think, like, black folks supposed to be locked up. You know, it's like whatever state we go to, if we go to their prison or the detention centers, you know, it's like an expectation that there's going to be black men there. And I have a problem with that. That lets me know
yeah.
that there's something wrong in society at a deep level that needs to be addressed.
Agreed. Now, you mentioned earlier that you know, in dealing with conflict, that you get into, you know, the background of, you know, a kid that you might be mentoring or something like that, because it might be something deeper than what a lot of people realize.
Right.
You know, I think that a lot of times we miss that. You know, we kind of see things face value, whether it be whatever conflict. You know, in working, when I'm going to go by my own experience. You know, I
mm-hmm.
worked, you know, 6 years in disciplinarian and assistant to a dean as well in CPS.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, a lot of times people will look at something that happens as far as a conflict, a fight or something like that, and not really see more into how it or why it happened. You know, based on the student's background, you know, their family structure or what's going on in their neighborhood and things like that. So I'm just saying all that I hear you, and that's good that you, obviously, that you do that. You know how to reach and touch the kids and to dig deeper into what's going on with them.
Right.
Now, do you think that that's something that is being missed, though, in the community? I mean, how it's... You know, I like to talk a lot about, well, I don't like to talk about it, but occasionally I find myself talking a lot about fear, you know, and I think
mm-hmm.
that there's a lot of fear, a lot of low self-esteem and things like that
mm-hmm.
that's going on in our community, especially
right.
with the kids of today. You know, how can we, you know, how can we change that?
Well, I think one of the ways that we have to start changing it, or the approach that we have to take, is we got to make sure that we're sending the right message. and crafting the right message to our young people. Like, you know, I even remember growing up, when I was growing up, you know, the message a lot of times to African-American youth is to escape. You know, do well in school, you know, get to college, escape, don't come back.
Yes.
But the thing is in other communities, the best and the brightest, they go away, they get a fine education, they develop skills, knowledge, and abilities, and they bring that resource back to their community to make their community stronger and to build their community. Well, we're spending all our time escaping. We're running from it. And so the best and brightest leave Englewood. The best and brightest leave Bronzeville. They leave Austin, and they don't return. And so the thing is, we have to be able to reinvest in our community, the community that brought us up. We need to be willing to reinvest in that community with the knowledge, skills, and abilities that we've attained. And have a sense of community and understand that, you know, we have to give back to our community. We have to build our community. And so I think there's a mindset shift that needs to take place in the African-American community, understanding that if you can't just take away from the community and never give back. So that's an issue that needs to be addressed.
Right on. That's wow. See, that's what I'm talking about. As far as you mentioned, getting that different mindset, creating awareness, building education. Now, I know that, you know, we'll get into the manhood development camp in just a second, but I know that you also, you know, I mentioned a little bit about the whole inequality in the judicial system.
Right.
You know, and a lot of we've talked a lot on this show about voting, you know, and you know, we've got the runoff elections coming up in Chicago soon. But the thing that we kind of dropped the ball on a lot is the congressional elections and the judges and things like that. And so what I was looking at for tonight is ways that we could improve or increase education in helping all of our people in not getting caught up in this racial inequality. I mean, but how does that really come about? Like I said, I know that you've been on that for a long time, but, you know, maybe you can help me out to understand how does that inequality happen?
Right. Well, I think one, how it happens is that we have people who are in political office that don't truly represent our interests and our needs. Now, there's a reason for that. They don't represent our interests and our needs is because we're not truly their constituent. This is what we do as a people is two or three times a year we tell people, register to vote. You need to vote, but you need to know why you're voting, right?
Right on.
And so that's the surface level that I'm talking about. People, if we ask 10 people how things get pushed through down in Springfield, you probably have one out of 10 that could actually tell you how the political process goes, how the legislative process goes. And so we're not engaged enough. So basically somebody tells us this is who you should vote for, and they give you some very topical surface reasons why you should vote for them. But the devil is in the details. We need to start digging a little deeper and understanding what our needs are and how it relates to this person who says that they want to represent us. The other thing is, if we start investing in our own businesses and having some economic base, so now from an economic base, we can identify a candidate that is going to meet the interests of our agenda, and we can support that candidate, and we can have a clear understanding of why we're supporting that candidate. And I just think that, you know, it's a sham ran on us every year. Like, you know, people go around the churches. You know, we have pastors that allow folks to come into their pulpit and say, hey, you know, vote for me. And then you never see these individuals again. Right? And then the next thing you know, you're experiencing pain because you didn't understand from a very from the ground level up how politics impacts your community, impacts the things that happen to your children. Like, working in juvenile justice, you got African-American youth make up about 17% of youth between the ages of 10 and 17 in Cook County, but they represent 98% of those that are detained currently as we speak at the detention center. So how is that possible? But people are not asking enough questions, or they're not showing any type of outrage. I mean, people should be outraged. Like, why is it 98% of the people that's detained at Cook County Juvenile Detention Center, why are they African-American? And why is no one talking? Why is that a news story, right?
Right. So do you think that the people just don't know? I mean, is that the case then, or is just not that trigger of emotion to get them riled up?
Well, yeah, I think they just don't know. But, you know, we have a responsibility to sort of seek out and find information. You know, it's called doing some research. But if we rely every night, right, if we just rely on, you know, some of our fine news broadcasters to give us the evening news, then we take that as gospel. But there's all I put out an article a few weeks ago. It was called Subtle But Not So Subtle, talking about racial inequality and ethnic disparities in the juvenile justice system, along with a 14-minute video where I broke it down, and people flew me to Baltimore to talk about what was going. Now Baltimore knew, they knew in Baltimore what was going on in Chicago. They flew me to Baltimore to talk about what was going on in Chicago, right? But we like topical information. We like, you know, we gonna watch Scandal. We gonna watch, you know, all of the hit shows that everybody into. But we won't take the time to do research and find out why is it so many black men locked up? Why is it so many why is the high school dropout rate in Chicago so high? You know, what's going on in these communities that we can do? What is something that we can do at a very basic level that can help to support some of these families, some of these young men, some of these young women? You know, what is it that we can do? People don't ask that. It's like a sense of, I got mine, and so because I got mine, good luck. Right?
Right.
That's pretty right. Much what we're doing.
Yeah. It seems, I think you mentioned it a little while ago, that it's this kind of a numbing kind of feeling. Maybe it's
right.
Expected. I think you said expected. You know, it's like, oh well,
right.
it's just part of the norm now. That's just as they say, it is what it is. You know, and then we
right.
you just got to keep it moving. But no, that's a great point. And the other one is you mentioned as far as with the voting and things like that. I think that as voters, we need to have expectations of these people that we're voting for and stick to them. You know, we get caught up, like you said, with the whole cloak and dagger, the lights and mirrors, smoke and mirrors of election time. Like you said, they come to the pool pits and they come around your neighborhood that one time around the year, and you see these commercials and you see their boards and all that stuff. And
right.
And we have these discussions, but then 6 months later, we forget about them. And, you know, by the time we get upset about something is when you got that 3-foot deep pothole, you know, or your area is drug infested again and stuff like that. You know, but
right.
I think we fail to, you know, set these expectations for the people we want to vote for and hold them accountable, you know, for that.
Right.
You know, I know that's one of your, I think, isn't that one of your acronyms in your title? Expectations, I think.
Yeah, it is. Expectations. Yeah,
okay.
It's the final
okay.
E in my acronym for BELIEVE. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, I was doing my research. You mentioned research. I was doing my research.
right.
Now, since we brought up the book, you know, it's Believe in Your Dreams, right? Which is available on Amazon.
Right.
And Believe is an acronym. Can you break down that acronym real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. So the B is for buy-in. So whatever it is we want, you know, politically, you know, educationally, in our community, whatever it is we want in life, you know, and you pick what that is for you, you know, you have to be bought into it. You have to be 100% bought into it. And I always tell people when I speak, if you're selling something, if you're a salesman, you're going to have success if you believe in the product that you're selling. And so buy in to your dreams, buy in to your goals are very important. The second letter is E, which stands for enthusiasm. And I always tell people, nothing ever great in this world was created without a great deal of enthusiasm and zest and zeal and excitement about seeing that thing come to fruition. The next letter is L, which stands for love for self. And you touched on it earlier in terms of a lot of people in our community are dealing with low self-esteem. You have people out here that really don't love themselves. They have a poor self-image, a low sense of self-worth. And so I try to, particularly with young people and old, but particularly with young audiences I talk to, is encourage them to truly love themselves, to believe in themselves and their abilities, to not try to be a carbon copy of somebody else, but to be the absolute best person that they can be. And when you truly love yourself, then you can extend that love to somebody else, right? The I is for inspiration. And I tell people all the time, not only should we seek inspiration, but we should seek to be an inspiration to someone else, right? Pay it forward. Someone inspired me in my lifetime, right? I had many role models growing up in my community. And I grew up with your cousin, Ray Griggs. We grew up together in University Park. And so there was adults in our lives that inspired us, the Mr. Parkers, Ed Palmers, Chuck Collins, Gloria Barnett, Brookings. I mean, there were individuals that inspired us. And since they inspired us, we have a responsibility to turn around and inspire somebody else. The V in believe is for vision. Without vision, the people perish. Or as they say, we take a page out of Helen Keller's book, who said, I would rather have vision without sight than sight without vision. In other words, everything that takes place, it first takes place in the theater of the mind. Like this show, you came up with this idea, probably sitting at home one day saying, I want a radio show. It was a thought that you had in your mind. You had a vision in your mind, and you made that vision come to fruition. And then the final letter is E, which stands for expectation. And I get young people all the time because I say, how many of you want to be a millionaire? And every hand to go up in the room, right? You know, yeah, of course everybody want to be a millionaire.
Right.
But then I say, how many of you expect to be? And that's a different question, because when you set certain expectations, you show up behind the words. You know, it's not just a good you know, fluffy feeling, you know, and you're motivated and inspired, but now you put together an action plan which says, this is the expectation that I set for my life, and in order, if I'm not at that point now, I have to become somebody different to be there. Because obviously, if my goal is to have a PhD, and right now I don't even have a GED, I got to put certain steps in place to put me on the path to get to where it is I want to go. And so you have to have expectations for your life.
Right.
And that's
on.
Believe. That's the acronym Believe.
That's Believe in Your Dreams, ladies and gentlemen. Author Mac McGee. You can find it at Amazon. McGee's M C G H E E. Is it Mac D or just Mac McGee on Amazon?
Well, my middle name is Dion, but yeah, on Amazon it's Mac McGee.
It's just Mac McGee. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I reached out to you, man, when I saw that you got the Manhood Development Camp. You know, it was up and running now. You got dates set and everything like that, man. So
right.
You know, I was really excited to see, you know, when you posted that on Facebook. And I'm like, man, I got to get this brother on the show immediately so he can talk about what's going on. Because a lot of people talk it, but they don't do it. You know, and you're
right
out here, and you're getting it done, man. So you got this camp starting April 4th, right?
Yes, it's going to be starting April 4th. And, you know, just to give you the background is basically, you know, I just said, you know, it's time to do more. You know, I got to do more. Even though I've worked in this field for 21, 22 years now, you know, it's always, you know, what I've pretty much done has been a function of my employment. Right. And so a lot of times we think, OK, well, you know, hey, I work at a school or I work at a youth center or whatever. And, you know, I'm doing my part. But at the rate at which our young men are dying and going to jail, we're not doing enough. We're just not doing enough. We're losing too many young men. And I talk to people all the time. I have a 12-year-old daughter named Maya. And, you know, I have this thing I go around. I say, you know, I got this campaign. It's called A Husband for Maya, because one day I want my daughter to have a husband. But if they keep going to jail and getting sent to the cemetery at the rate at which they're going, I mean, her selection of men will be very limited, right? So I say, well, what is it that I could do? Besides what I'm doing on a daily basis, what more can I do? And I say, you know what? Every weekend there's party promotion, you know, there's football games, and, you know, sometimes I attend some of these things, right? And it's men everywhere, you know, and they laughing and they having a good time and they betting on the game, who going to win this and that. But then when you say, hey, we're having a volunteer program, you know, could we get some brothers to come? Nobody shows up.
Great.
I have a problem with that, right? So I'm like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to lead by example. I'm going to give up 3 hours. I'm not being paid for this. I'm going to give up 3 hours every Saturday for 8 weeks. And I want to invite as many men as possible to come and give up 3 hours on Saturday. They're not doing nothing, you know, probably figuring out where they're going to go to breakfast or something, or where to party at for the evening.
Right.
And so
for the evening.
If we could give up 3 hours, you know, and so that was really the driving force, was I don't want to have any more conversations about young people are going crazy. I don't want to have any more of those conversations. I want to say, you know what, there's a need. And I want to show up to fill that need the best way I can. And if I can encourage others to join me in that effort, because so everybody has a story. You have a story. Everybody has a story that some of these young people need to hear, how you got over this obstacle or how you was able to get through this various trial and tribulation in your life. And, so I want people to have the opportunity to share their stories, to be able to build relationships with young people, for young people to know, hey, you're not alone, that, you know, I went through something similar to what you're going through now, but if you just hold on, you can make it. And that's really the driving force behind the Manhood Development Camp.
Man, awesome. Man, that's what I'm talking about. So can people still register? I mean, so how does this work now? I mean, I know you said we said it starts April 4th. What is the age range that you're looking at, and how can people register if they're interested?
Okay. So, and I definitely want to just dig into this. So the age range is 12 to 18. That's the age range, 12 to 18. We're seeking 30 to 40 young men. They can go to my website, www.macmcgee.com, and on the banner at the top of the screen, you click here for Manhood Development Camp, and they'll show them how to register, all right? There's a fee associated with it because it's 8 weeks. It's 3 hours a week, which comes to basically if they enroll their son or their nephew or grandson, it's $20 a week. We're going to have them for 3 hours. We're going to feed them. We're going to have guest lecturers. But what I just put a video on Facebook today letting parents and grandparents and aunties and whoever know, don't let cost be a factor. If you can't pay, just call me. We want your son anyway. That was the purpose of, I did a GoFundMe, a crowdfunding campaign where I've raised close to, right now, I think I'm around $2,300. And so we want them to come anyway. We don't want cost to be a factor. And so if cost is a factor for any parent where $20 a week is too much and they just can't swing it, I'm going to cover it. I'm going to pay for their son to come. And these generous donors who have contributed to the GoFundMe campaign, we will pay for their son to be present because that's an investment in their future.
Right on. Now, it's Saturday. Where is it? Where are you going to be doing it at?
It's going to be at Leo High School, which is 7901 South Sangamon. A fraternity brother of mine, William Gray, who's the assistant director of the camp, he's the dean over there at Leo. When I first put out the call at the end of the year, he was like one of the first people to respond and say, hey, man, I think we can, use Leo High School, And so he made that happen. He'll be present. I got a couple other guys who helped me, put the camp together. And basically, We want to just really pour into these young men. I have a number of men lined up who have reached out like, hey, I want to come and talk to them about, manhood. I want to come and talk to them about rites of passage. I want to come. I mean, the response has been beautiful. So now we're at the point where we got to get these brothers signed up. So whatever you can do in that way of getting young men or informing the public and parents about the program, that would be very helpful. I mean, we got millions here in Chicago, and if we can't get 40 kids, then something wrong.
Now, I noticed that on the event page that you've got, and all this, ladies and gentlemen, will be, of course, I mean, you can find that on Mac's website, macmcgee.com, or you can find them social media-wise, Facebook, Speaker Mac D. McGee, and, of course, I'll be sharing and posting it on the Greenhouse Effect and on my page as well. But on the event page that, you break down the camp and everything, I just noticed you broke down three main components of the camp, and then you also you said that the participants will be immersed in the principles of the Guzu Saba.
Right.
Yeah, right, okay. That's... I used to work with a charter school, and they tried to practice a lot of principles of Maat and things like, African principles taken back in the day. And I just wanted to bring that up because I just noticed that. And I just thought that was cool. That's all.
it is cool because years ago, back in 20 years ago, me and a good friend of mine, one of my best friends, Jamie Barnett, we started a program in Ford Heights called the Jidani Project, and it was an Afrocentric rites of passage program for young men in that community, which we expanded to Robbins and Country Club Hills at the time, and we taught those young men the principles of Nguzu Saba, you know, and we spent time making sure that they understood the importance of each one of them. So I'm like, you know, we're gonna bring that back, you know, we're gonna bring that back, and we're gonna, you know, make sure that they, you know, familiar with it year round, and not that, you know, you don't just have to be familiar with it or reminded of it during Kwanzaa, but you need to understand that these principles, if implemented, can be very effective and empowering for our communities.
Right, right. Definitely you got to use it year-round, and not just around Kwanzaa.
Right.
I was in the Upward Bound program, you know, when Upward Bound was really strong in the right before graduating from high school. So we're talking mid-'80s to early 90s. You know, and part of the program it was a program at Roosevelt University at the time, and the director was Roosevelt Robertson and Sister Myers, and they, they were on us about it, man. I mean, they put it on us every day as far as the principles and utilizing them every day. You know, and not just certain times of the year, not just, you know, when we just went there on Saturdays or spent the summer there and stuff like that. I mean, you know, they really talked about how you can do this, you know, year round. You know, what are you going to do to make a difference in your community? You know, are you just going to follow what everybody else is doing, or are you going to do something different and make change happen? So,
absolutely.
You know, I see that's what you're doing, man, and I think it's awesome. I think it's great.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Let everybody know that you know.
So, again, I kind of gave some of the information already, but if anybody wants to get more information on the Manhood Development Camp or get in touch with you or anything like that, what's the best way to connect with you?
So, yeah, obviously they can go to my website. That's macmcghee.com. MacMcghee.com, or they can reach out to me. They can call this 800 number, 1-888-624-4333. That's 1-888-624-4333. Or they can send me a friend request on Facebook to Speaker Mac D. McGhee on Facebook. And, you know, I usually have my electronic device with me 24/7. I think I sleep with it, but they can hit me up on Facebook. They can call that 800 number, which links to my cell phone, or they could go to the website, and you know, they can even leave a message or send a message through the website. You know, but the goal, really, what we want to do is we're going to run this first pilot. This is a pilot. We're going to run it 8 weeks. You know, go back to the drawing board. But my vision is for it to be a year round program, something that is year round here in the city of Chicago, where you know, I don't call them at risk, but I would say at promise. You know, our young men that are at promise, but they just need a little nudge in the right direction, where they can come, and parents that are stressed out can send their sons and nephews to come and be around just positive brothers. You know, sometimes it's just that. You know, just, I mean, hey, we can bring in a flat screen TV. We can watch the playoffs together in a room with young men surrounded by positive older men. You know, sometimes, you know, we make it too difficult. You know what I'm saying? It could be a lot more simpler than we realize.
Yeah, and these kids, from my experience, I mean, everybody uses the word transparent. But sometimes it's easy to deal with them. And at times they can be transparent, but it's just their delivery can be a little, aggressive maybe to some people, a little harsh or something like that. But from my experience, it seems like as long as you're sincere and honest and fair with them, you know what I mean, and they're teenagers, you know, so, you know, they're going to act out sometimes, they're going to do this and they're going to do that, you know, but as long as it seems that if you're really honest and fair with all of them, whether they be at promise or at risk or however you want to, you know, call them, I mean, a lot of times it makes a difference to them. I think, from my experience, I think it makes a big difference.
Well, it's a saying that I've been saying probably for 20 years now, is that children don't care what you know until they know that you care, you know. And young people have a sense of feeling and knowing if you really care about their – if you really have their best interest at heart.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. they really do. So two other questions, man, and like I said, I know you took a little time to grace us on the show here. Is there a deadline for registration for the camp?
Look, we're going to sign them up all the way until 9 a.m. Saturday, April 4th. So,
right,
you know, if
okay,
people miss the deadline and they want to, you know, drive down there and bring, I will be there. That's why I'll be. I'll probably be there at 8 o'clock, you know, just trying to get things ready. But, you know, we're going to show up. I'm going to show up. And I hope other people show up, and we have some young men that, you know, are in need of some positive role modeling. And, you know, we're going to do what we do, and we're going to keep doing it. So, you know, hit me up. If you have any other questions, let me know.
Right on. And one last thing here. I call this show the Greenhouse Effect FX. And I have this hashtag that I call the Power of Your Effect. And the whole purpose of it is about how your energy or how your positivity or sincerity, whatever you want to call it, how it can affect somebody else, almost like the pay it forward kind of thought and idea.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's like your power, the effects of your power, how it affects other people, you know, and that's just
right.
Something that you know, that's something that you're doing, that you've been doing for over 20 years and you continue to do right now, obviously. In doing so and trying to come up with movement and trying to, you know, to make change happen, you know, I've realized recently, and this is just me speaking on something right now, because you've got me very inspired here. I had to learn the hard way that I can't do a lot of things by myself, you know, and a lot of times you're going to need other people to help you with a movement or a goal or to make some kind of social change. But the hard part, it seems, is to really kind of find that team, if you will. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, to get that support. And I'm curious, you know, how, you know, as far as the development that you had to go through, you know, because everybody that's listening is always looking for change. You know, we're always looking to make things
right.
Better in our lives and to find our purpose, you know, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So before you go, I was just hoping that maybe you could, you know, just leave listeners with a little inspiration or a little something on how you were able to, you know, develop your craft, you know, find your purpose, you know, build your team, something like that. I think a lot of people use the term branding and things like that.
Right.
So, you know, before you go, what's something you can leave the listeners with, you know, to show the power of your effect?
Well, that's excellent. I will do that. So, name of my organization is Transforming Lives International. Me and my mother, before she passed, we came up with that name sitting at her kitchen table, right? And my tagline is helping people discover their purpose through inspiration. So I'm all about purpose. I believe that each and every one of us has a unique purpose, and we have to be able to connect to what our God-given purpose is in life. And everybody's purpose is not the same. You know, I didn't necessarily always know my purpose, but one of the keys or hints to what your purpose and what your gifts are is that it's something that you're naturally passionate about, and it's also something that you do well naturally. I mean, when I talk with young people, you know, and I sort of, you know, make it into a joke, but I say, there's somebody in here that makes cookies very well, you know, and they start laughing. But the reality is, you know, we have Famous Amos out there. We got Miss Fields out there. I mean, so everybody has something that they do well. You know, somebody will say, well, man, how do you do that? And to you, you're like, well, you know, I just do it. You know, growing up, like, you know, your cousin, Ray, which is one of my best friends down there in Dallas, right? I mean, he just did, when it came to athletics, we was like, man, how did you do that? You know, it just sort of came naturally, but it was something that he developed. But he also had a gift for mathematics. He was on the math team. You know, wasn't nobody on the math team when he was in high school, but Ray was on the math team. That was something that came to him naturally. And as you know, he's taken that to a whole nother level. And so I would say to anybody that's listening, spend time searching yourself, connecting to what your purpose is, what it is that you're passionate about. I had a mentor ask me years ago, Mac, what is it that you're so passionate about that you would do for free, but you would do it so well that people would be willing to pay you for it? When people can answer that question for themselves, what is it that you would do if you could do it every day and you didn't care whether you got paid or not? That's what you love to do. That's what your purpose is. That's what you're connected to, and that's where your gifts lie. And so I spent time, you know, and then other people recognized it in me and would encourage me in that way. In terms of building a team, that's an excellent question. When you start walking in the direction of your purpose and your passion, God puts people in your path that are assigned to you to help you build it. I mean, I just had a conference call Sunday night with three dynamic women who basically, like, we want to help you. We want to help you build what you're trying to do. You know, and I mean, it's a beautiful thing because sometimes you go out and you're looking for people to do certain things, but when people just start showing up, I mean, you showed up in my life, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that lets me know I've been, you know, like in the book The Alchemist, Santiago is on a journey in search of his personal legend. And along the way, he meets different people along the way that helps him to realize who he is, what his purpose is, and what he should be connected to. And so I just tell people, just start walking in the direction of your purpose. You know, and you have to have faith, because faith and fear cannot exist in the same place. So you have to have faith. You're not going to always know. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how manhood camp is going to go. I don't. I'm going to do it.
Right.
It's not, no one's going to stop me from doing it, but I don't know how it's going to go. But I'm going to do it anyway, instead of talking myself out of it, because most people sit around, they have great ideas, they have things they want to do, but then they talk themselves out of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Outstanding. Man.
Yes, sir.
Mag, I know you got to get back, man. You know, I wish we had more time with you. I really appreciate you stopping by.
Well, thank you for having me. And, you know, anytime you want me to come back, just reach out to me.
Oh, surely. I'm sure we'll be bringing you back. Definitely. Plus, we got to get an update on the camp and everything too. So, yeah, we'll definitely be bringing you back soon. As I mentioned too, I'm going to start trying to bring in other mentors as well. You mentioned Baltimore. I know somebody. I believe he lives in Baltimore, who is also a speaker and a mentoring program as well. Lamar Shields, name ring a bell?
Oh, okay. No, so, but we need to connect.
Okay. Yeah. So this is definitely something that I'm trying to work on, and bringing people who are making a change just as you are doing. So in the end, we all can connect, you know, and network and everything.
Right. Okay.
All right. Mac, again, I appreciate you, sir. You have a good evening. You be careful out there, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thank you. All right. You have a good
all
evening.
Right.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, that was Mac McGee. Man, I'm a little out of breath here because I was, you know, that was really, really great. That was really good. I see Adam's in the queue here, Adam. I'm just going to bring you in right now, Adam. And I want to apologize to you up front because I know you wanted to probably ask Mac a question or something like that, but I didn't. We were running short on time here, so we definitely have to bring him back so you guys can have a conversation as well. So how you doing tonight?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. So, you know, again, sorry I didn't have a chance to bring you in before you had to go.
Oh, no. That's just – I just wanted to give him props, man. It's amazing the people in your life and the people that you know and the talents that they have and the fact that they're available and you have this platform to share that with us. It's just – it's impressive.
Yeah, I feel really good about it. You know, like I said, I've got some other guys lined up too, man, so I'm just hoping that this is something – well, I'm not going to hope. I'm going to say that I'm going to put it out there that this is something that we're all a part of, you know, that is going to grow to be even more than just what you experienced tonight.
It's just, I mean, the leaps and bounds that you've taken with this show and the great information and the great guests that you shared, it's, you know, it you call it what you want. I'm impressed.
Okay, all right, I'll take it.
And the fact that you're my cousin makes it even better because eventually it rubs off on me somewhere.
Yeah, well, at the same time, because you're my cousin, I'm sure that if it was a bunch of garbage or BS, you wouldn't be saying all that either. So, you know, because that's one thing about our families, that we are a little bit honest with each other.
A little bit, to a fault
sometimes,
but absolutely.
A little bit. a little bit. So, you know, man, I appreciate you and everybody else listening tonight. Like I said, I know it wasn't the normal Monday night, but a couple of things about it was pretty good because I got a chance to play around with the another night. You know, I know you've been looking for more than just one night a week, and I know a few other listeners have been also. And then it's St. Patrick's Day, so the color is green.
Absolutely. The color is green,
you know,
Patrick.
It's a win-win.
And I didn't even realize that your middle name was Patrick.
Yeah,
it is. You know, it all works out, man.
It all works out, brother. It all works out.
It does.
So you got anything else going on? Any projects you got going on or anything happening out there?
Nah, just trying to keep warm. It's windy and cold tonight, but other than that, pretty much the same old, same old.
All right, very good then.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I just wanted to, you know, bring in and just say, you know, congratulations, another great job, another great show.
I appreciate it.
You know,
thanks a lot.
You're doing it, man. You're making it work.
We're getting it
and
done,
I always
brother.
Enjoy it. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, man. I'll talk to you.
Sounds good.
All right. I love it when Adam calls in. And that's just because, you know, he's my cousin. He says all the right things. But it's just a good conversation piece, man. So, you know, I love it. I appreciate Adam. So, I was, you know, hoping that Matt could have stayed in a little bit longer. But, I mean, you know, we'll definitely be bringing him back. And I'm getting messages on the phone right now, you know, from everybody that listened to the show and, you know, really felt inspired with what he had to say. It was really good. So, again, I appreciate Mr. McGee. Again, check him out, macmcgee.com. Social media is Facebook, speaker Mac D. McGee. And I'll, of course, be posting up information, following up social media-wise on Facebook and Twitter and on the website, thegreenhouseeffect.com. And again, if you got any questions, you know, you can always hit me up. Again, hit that email up. Try my new email, wgreen@thegreenhousefx.com. And then, of course, you got your social media connections, as always. So, before we end the show, even though Mac was inspiration and he did show the power of his effect, before we go here, I'll leave you with another little inspirational piece. Of course, we'll cut the show a little early tonight. But next week, we'll keep it going. We'll come back on a regular day and time on Monday evening, 7 p.m., of course. And like I said, I've got speakers that I want to start lining up that I'm already started to line up. Again, I've got some other segments that I'm looking to do as well. I want to start looking at some health segments, doing some mentoring. Again, another life coach. We had we had three life coaches in a row. Matt came in, Alanda Gregory, and before that, Robin Clark. Wow, check that out. I didn't even realize that. So we might be tapping into something here. We got life coaches, mentoring. We're going to start doing some health segments. So, man, tell a friend, bring a friend. Every Monday night, right now, at least just Monday night, 7 p.m., blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhousefx. You know somebody that you think should be a part of the show? Again, let them know, wgreen@thegreenhouseeffect.com. So before we go here, I'm going to close out with another little inspiration piece here, another power of your effect. It's about 5 minutes here, so put the phone on speaker. Sit back, relax, and just listen to this other message. And again, Monday night, 7 p.m., you know the color's green. All right, you guys, take care. Good night.
If you do it once, you can do it again and again and again.
Motivation doesn't get anything done. Motivation gets you going. Discipline, commitment, strong habits is what gets things done. Motivation is very ungrounded, right? It's all up here. Whoa, I feel good. But when it comes time to bring it into practice, you cannot rely on it. Motivation is just a feeling. Grounded action is what gets things done. So here's my invitation to you. The next time you feel motivated, don't do anything grand and exciting or set any lofty expectations for yourself to like stay that way or whatever the case may be. Get a pad and paper and write down one or two things that you're going to commit to doing every single day, no matter what. You're gonna use that motivation to build a machine for yourself.
Sometimes it ain't about being the smartest. Sometimes it's not even about working the hardest. Sometimes it's about consistency. You consistency, just keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it and never stop and never give up and never quit and keep doing it and day after day, play after play, second after second, minute by minute. Are you hearing what I'm saying?
Again and again and again.
What changes our whole life is action. Why don't we take action? Fear. What do we got to do to get ourselves to do it? We got to make sure that we push ourselves through it by making a decision. The point in which change happens is a decision. Every change in your life that you want will come from something simple, a decision. People go, what does it take to change? Decide. You go, oh, God, sounds so simple. And so basically, with that, you need to already have done it, Mr. Robbins. No, it is that easy, and you're still not doing it because you are not putting yourself in a state to decide. See, a real decision is not like a preference. It's not like when you say, I'll try it and see. That's not a decision. Decision comes from Latin. It means like incision, to cut off from. Decision is when you cut off any possibility except the thing you're committed to. Like, that is it. When you really decide, it's not an effort. Once you cut it off, it doesn't take effort. Deciding takes effort, but once you've decided, it's over. You don't think about it anymore. It's like it's easier to fast than it is to diet. Because when you're fasting, somebody offers you something, you don't even think about it. You go, no, I'm not eating. Right? When you're dieting, you're like, well, maybe we could have a little more. This is a little piece of cake. Not that many calories. Right? Pretty soon you're back to where you were again. So a real decision is what you got to make. When you make a real decision, life changes. But it's a real decision, you burn your bridges, you only move forward. Now, way to get yourself there is to put yourself in state and condition it. Conditioning is this. Build the muscle. Do you do it one time? No. You do it a lot and you do beyond what you're comfortable with and the muscle expands. And now what used to be hard to do, as the muscle grows, is easy. That's the same thing with every other kind of muscle. But I'll give you one example. They take monkeys and they will take four of their fingers and tape them down. And then they take one finger and they bend it back and forth 10,000 times. Every time they bend this finger back and forth like this, in your brain, for you to do this once, twice, you have to make connections between neurons in your brain. Neurons, a big word for nerve cells. So to do this, imagine, as a metaphor, it's not exactly like this, to do this once, you got to put a connection, a thin thread had to be grown between this neuron and this neuron. That's an example. That's a metaphor. Do it again, two thin threads. Do it 10,000 times, and guess what? You are wired to do this. Can you condition yourself to feel depressed to where it literally, it feels more comfortable because you go there more often and you're wired to be there? Yes or no? Can you condition yourself to be quick to anger? Yes or no? Can you condition yourself to feeling overwhelmed at the drop of a hat? Can you condition yourself to feel loved all the time? Even if people say, I hate you. Yeah, could you still feel loved? Could you condition yourself to feel happy as a consistent way of living all the time, yes or no? But you know what? Most people don't believe that, but of course it is. It's the same nervous system. You'll develop something called emotional muscle. And emotional muscle is where whole life comes in. Repetition is the mother of skill until it gets conditioned, until it's automatic.
When you have built a habit, it's ingrained in your nervous system in such a way that the brain doesn't even have to consider whether or not it'll get done. It just gets done because you committed. So stop getting motivated. You don't need motivation. No, you need motivation. Motivation doesn't afford you anything except good feelings in your body. The good feelings in your body is an indication that there's something that you want. Now you get to work by doing it every single day.
And again, and again.
Let me out.